Hello and welcome to the Lying Media Bastards radio show.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living room. Let me have my toaster and my TV, my steel belt and radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Your papers are not in order. Your ass will fly.
Folks, listen to Radioactive San Diego. That is, there was Strike Anywhere doing Laughter in a Police State. Before that, we had You Are the Government by Bad Religion, and I always thought it was called Police Truck, a song from Dead Kennedys, but my MP3 here says Police Jerk. So I'm torn. Special show today. We're going to be interviewing Ron Anisich. I'm gonna get his name wrong right now. I'm a jerk. Ron Anisich, who was the host of another radio show, Bad Cop No Donut. We talking about the police and all the wonderful things they do here on the show. I'm kidding. They don't do wonderful things. Anyhow, I'm going to play one more song before we get into that. And very fittingly, it's going to be a KRS-One, Sounds of the Police. Got to throw in a little notice before that. Tonight, open mic night, poetry here at the Radioactive Studios. Got a nice little lounge area out here. Beautiful San Diego weather, 7:30, come on by, spit a few rhymes, sit and watch, what have you. We're glad to have you coming, and I'll be here, like, selling refreshments or something. But anyhow, I'm going to play this song, I'm going to get Ron on the phone, and we'll talk the afternoon away about law enforcement in North America. If you want any questions, hey, we'll do that preemptively. If you have any questions you'd like me to ask Ron about the police, hop on your AOL or Yahoo Instant Messenger. Send a message to Radioactive SD. If you're not listening to this live, then you blew it. No questions for you. Anyhow, I'm Jake, Long Media Bastard Show. Thanks for listening. Music.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We now will be interviewing Ron Anisich, who's the... hell, let me turn that song off. Bad Cop No Donut. Ron, do we have you?
I hope so.
Okay, let me turn some knobs here and make sure we get the full effect. Could you say another little something?
La, 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 la.
Hi. Yes, Ron and I were speaking earlier about professionalism in community radio, and I think they're... possibly like oil and water. We're not sure.
It's the charm.
Exactly. The charm of the thing. It's like sitting by a fireplace or something. So Ron hosts the radio show Bad Cop No Donut on 88.1 CKLN FM in Toronto, and is rebroadcast every Friday here on Radioactive at noon on Fridays. How would you describe your program, Ron?
It's funny because I had to describe it to somebody just yesterday, and the way I described it was that it's a fairly dry newscast just covers it's a weekly review of what's been written in mostly the mainstream press about police officers who commit crimes. So it's kind of a weekly review of the press.
Okay, so it's sort of a weekly news review, but with the sole focus on crime, and the sole focus of that crime being crime committed by law enforcement.
Right. Police abuse is the general cover-all term that I use to describe
crime. Okay, yeah, and it's, I think it's a great public service that you do with the show, just in that you rarely hear this sort of story, where we're sort of brought up in our societies to feel that the cops are the good guys, they're our friends, they're our heroes, they're our protectors, and you're all, well, there's another side to that. And
there is. One thing that concerns me is the way the media, in the way the media reports these kinds of stories, is that they very often portray them as isolated cases. There'll be, say, a guy like Cedric Green, that's the guy's name, right? That guy in San Diego, he got arrested last week for...
Honestly, I didn't hear about it until I heard it on your show.
Okay, well, I think the story is, if I recall right, that he had sex with a teenager in his squad car.
Really?
And the way it reads in the paper, it reads like it's outrageous, and this kind of thing never happens. But, I mean, if you listen to my show, you'll know for a fact that it happens several times a week, and those are just the ones that I'm able to find out about. I'm sure there are many, many, many more that I don't hear anything about.
So give us a sampling. Like, what are some of the stories that you've covered in the past few weeks?
Oh, there'd be a list of past couple weeks. That'd be about.
Well, just the ones that jump out at you. Sort of. If we had folks listening, who
really jumps out at me for a specific reason, and that's because about a month ago I was having a. I reported on another very similar case in Pennsylvania, and although it was a 22nd item on the show, I eventually, the victim of the crime eventually got in touch with me. That's one of the things that I actually really value about the show, is it mm-hmm. gives me not just the insight into what it says in the paper, but very often I'll be able to talk with the people that are affected by it. But the worst stuff right now, I'm really concerned about what's going on here in Toronto. The police are pretty clearly out of control here.
Mm-hmm.
We've had in the past year or two, we've had hundreds of police officers. There's a law here that says you can't protest and you can't carry a firearm at a protest.
Okay.
Pretty reasonable law,
I would think.
But when the police protest, even though they were ordered not to be in uniform and not to be carrying guns, they had to be ordered to obey the law. That's an alarm bell in itself.
So hundreds
of them disobeyed, and none of them were ever punished. Now,
what were they protesting? I'm sorry. What were they protesting? These police officers?
It was a part of a labor negotiation.
Okay.
They were I hesitate to call these police associations unions, but the, let's just say the organization, I mean, in light of their long history of abuse of working people.
yeah, they're sort of unions and anti-unions at the same time.
Well, it's funny that they don't see, it's funny that they don't seem to recognize workers' rights unless it's their jobs. But they do, you know, we have the highest paid police force in our entire country, and a lot of people don't think we're getting our money's worth. We had a police officer come out, his name was Jim Castles, here a couple weeks ago. He's been a police officer for 30 years, and he basically came out to basically become a whistleblower. He was part of a major corruption investigation in Toronto, during which many, many, many police crimes were uncovered and very, very few were prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some serious concerns about it. For example, there's a police officer named Rob Kelly. He was actually on the show this week that you'll hear tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He's recently resigned despite several rulings that he could keep his job. So, I'm a little unfocused.
No, that's fine.
Where was I going with that?
I was talking about just what were some of the issues that were, or the, some of the stories you'd covered lately. You were talking about that you felt the police were out of control.
Oh, Jim Castles, right. Well, Castles discovered that in addition to this Rob Kelly fellow, there were 11 other police officers here in Toronto that were discovered to have used cocaine that they got from a locker, presumably a police locker. And they, quote-unquote, partied with these drugs that they stole from the evidence. And none of the officers were ever brought up on any charges, with the exception of Rob Kelly. And Rob Kelly, he's a cocaine addict. He was arrested and charged with trafficking, convicted on a lesser offense, possession. And he's... anyway, Castles comes out and he tells everybody about all these other cops that should have been in the same boat and aren't, and a lot of people here are now starting to ask questions. The things that concern me most are the big systematic corruption stories, things like Rampart in L.A.
Right.
They're a lot more common than you think. The police department in New Orleans, the Toronto police. I have to say, I'm not just saying this because I live here. They're lawless. it's bizarre to have a police force that seems to flagrantly disobey the law, and,
yeah,
and
I mean,
they are the people who are sworn to uphold that same law.
Yeah, the cocaine parties and the marching in the streets with guns sounds a little problematic.
It's you know. All I know is that if 100 of my friends who were concerned about poverty decided to go and have an anti-poverty protest at Queen's Park and we all brought guns, we would, you know, we'd be lucky to make it out of there alive, never mind, you know, not be charged with a criminal offense.
Yeah.
It's just unthinkable. Now, here, of course, in Canada, handguns are illegal, with the exception of police and military. So. It's not really feasible that that would ever happen.
Right. Now, are there noticeable differences? As an American, I'm mostly unfamiliar with all other countries. So are there significant differences between the American police force and the Canadian police force, sort of in the way that they operate or the limitations on their power or just sort of the day-to-day practices? Is there anything that jumps out like that?
You know, I originally thought so. When I started doing this work, I thought that that might be the case, but I really don't think so. I mean, they're the same kind of organizational structure. There's a minor difference, and that difference is that it's based more on the English system of law enforcement, so our police officers are not police officers, they're constables, constables on patrol, which is where... The word cop comes from.
Oh, okay. I learned something new already.
And that's part of the English tradition of law enforcement. You have some unique elements in your law enforcement down there that we don't have. That would be namely the role of the sheriff.
Okay. Actually, you should explain that to me, too. I really have always been kind of confused about sheriffs.
Well, sheriffs have been around ever since the colonial era in the United States. They were, their role was to guard prisoners and not so much a direct kind of law, not the kind of law enforcement that we picture the sheriffs doing today.
Mm-hmm.
They're certainly not a modern police force by any stretch of the imagination. But the, since the colonial era, you have had sheriffs that have had some of the... some of the responsibilities that they do today, which is why you have a system where the county sheriff are the people who run the jails.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that it's a blanket across the whole of the United States, but the way I think it works is there are local police departments, but when they take somebody into custody, they would still go to the county jail.
Mm-hmm.
This is a result of that double lineage going back to the colonial days.
Okay. I'd kind of thought that the only difference between police and sheriffs is sheriffs were more likely to wear cowboy hats. That's about the only thing that I've seen.
There's probably something to do that. I should add that these days I'm fairly aware that most of the sheriffs in the United States are elected.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I guess that's progress, because in the original American colonies, they were appointed.
Okay. Now since we're on sort of some general police questions, here's one that has bothered me for a long time. What is the connection between police officers and mustaches?
There's a rock group called the Authorities that have mentioned this in a song.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a mystery to me too. There was one time when I thought it was part of gay culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that maybe that the police had a disproportionate amount of homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that that's the case.
Because it seemed, you know, the mustache was a pretty popular piece of facial hair to have back in, like, the 70s, and it seems like the entire Western culture has grown out of that, except for police officers.
Yeah, that is a bit odd. I tried one briefly in the 90s, but my hair was way too long that I would have ever been confused for one of those guys.
I see. Okay, I'm sad to hear that. I was hoping there was a magic bullet there. The reason for that is this.
I'm pretty sure there's no reason. But it's a fairly accurate observation, and I would just note that people that socialize together tend to do a lot of similar things. You know,
that
you get a
true
bunch of punk rockers; they've all got Doc Martens and leather jackets. There's a certain social.
That's
there are
true
certain social reasons for that,
mm-hmm.
And I'm imagining that the same would be true of the police. I mean, they certainly, you know, operate like a gang.
They do.
So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that there might be elements in
it's part of your initiation.
Part of that that would lead to a mustache.
It's part of your initiation. You must grow a mustache.
I wonder if it's like hazing.
Okay, well, I wanted to talk, you know, you were giving us some interesting insights earlier into sheriff's departments and how they got started. Where did, you know, police get started, either in general or in on this continent? I talked to you on email earlier, the song I played before you came on, the KRS-One song, he talks about the sort of the growth of the invention of the police officer as someone who is supposed to round up runaway slaves. You'd said there was some truth to that.
Yeah, that's very accurate. You know, before the slave patrols, which were formed in the 1800s in the American Southeast, mostly,
mm-hmm.
there were they had a system of that was sort of like policing. They had what they called night watches in a lot of American cities. Now, these were not really police forces because, you know, a normal police force is on patrol 24 hours a day. But what happened in the South is they saw a need because of their fear because there were many cities where there were more black people than white people, and white people had had the need to remain dominant, and there was a very structured social hierarchy in the American South and a very bizarre honor system. So what happened was they formed slave patrols originally. They were mostly rural, so they would, you know, patrol rural areas, and these were mostly outside of cities. But what started to happen in around 1840, there were about, I guess 1840 to 1870, there were about three or four cities in the American South: Charleston, Mobile, Alabama, Savannah, Georgia, New Orleans. These were the first police forces built on slave on the slave patrol philosophy. It's interesting to note that in some of those cities, the whites were clearly a minority. But the mandate of the slave patrols was to catch, and it was written into the law that if they found a slave without a pass, and they used to have a pass system if a black person was not on the property of his owner. For example, a black person wants to go to his local church, he would require a pass for that. Now, these slave patrols, they'd come along and they would, and they were mandated by law to beat the people. This was part of the law. It says in the laws that regulated their behavior that if you, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but if you come across a black person without a pass, you are legally required to beat him and return him to the owner.
That would be sort of like the Miranda laws that we have today. Instead of reading the person their rights, you beat them with a stick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I should note also that a lot of these slaves that were beaten actually had passes. But what would happen is these patrols wouldn't be single individuals on patrol. They would patrol in groups. So what would happen very often is one would rip the pass out of the guy's hand while the other beat him. I should also note that they had less lethal weaponry, similar to tasers, but obviously not tasers.
Mm-hmm.
Their less lethal weaponry was a whip. A whip. And no, I'm not kidding. A whip was standard issue.
I'm not laughing because I don't believe you. I'm laughing because of the horror, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I know. Sometimes you just have to throw your arms up in the air and laugh because it's...
Yeah. Absurdity, yeah.
They had a sister.
Where
I was going with that, I should just finish off, was that
sure.
These slave patrols, these urban slave patrols in the few cities that I mentioned before, were the original police forces in the modern sense of the word. For example, they were paid a salary eventually, although originally they were not paid a salary. They were paid per returned slave.
I thought maybe just the joy of the beatings. I thought they would have been in for the kick.
Yeah, but they had they patrolled 24 hours a day, unlike the night watches that had existed before that, and after that, in fact, across America, and they were paid a regular salary. Those four cities were, I believe, the first examples of modern police forces in America, and all of those four were based on these slave patrols. So it's a very accurate when KRS-One is singing of the other thing is they're slave patrols and they're overseers. You played Sound of the Police, right?
I did.
Okay. So there's a section of that song where he's talking about the overseers, and the role of the overseers was on the plantation or on the farm, and the slave patrols enforced off of the plantations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just an interesting, there are a lot of complicated reasons why this happened too. Mostly because in the South they had a thing about the not wanting their authorities to be regulated by the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing that I don't really understand because I haven't spent much time in the South.
Right.
Apparently,
we all try to avoid that.
Slap in the face when the government would try to regulate their
beatings,
their patrols, and overseers.
Right. So, so then these overseers and fugitive slave patrols, they sort of took on more duties as time went by? Or was there another force they merged with to sort of form the beginnings of a police force? How did?
Well, I mean, if you accept that those were police forces in the modern sense, which I do, I think they seem to satisfy all of the conditions, then a little after that, this would have been the 1840s, by the time the 1900s came around, up in the northern part of the United States, and in fact in Canada also, there was a lot of labor unrest. People were organizing for the 8-hour, the 40-hour work week, 8-hour days, and very often there were protests, large gatherings, and police forces in the North were organized to deal with those. Now, a lot of the police forces in the North were actually private companies.
I was going to bring that up, actually. The Pinkertons?
That's right. Pinkerton's probably is definitely the best known. They were they in Chicago, I think?
I'm going to say sure.
Yeah, I'm not positive about that. But in any case, yeah, they are an example. Now these were, oftentimes these police forces in the North were owned and paid by the ruling elite, the same ruling elite that we have today, the captains of industry and whatnot, the Fords. And there are some brutal examples of police actions in those times. You know, there are famous cases like the Haymarket riot in Chicago.
In Howard Zinn's book, People's History of the United States, I mean, he essentially argues that there was a second civil war in the United States that was not mentioned during the late 1800s of, between workers and the forces that would put down workers, the Pinkertons.
Which were the northern, it's funny because you could liken them to the slave patrols in the sense that they were meant to enforce this social
servitude.
System of a very heavily enforced system of social status.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, in the same way that you had the elite in the South, the white wealthy slave owners in the North, you had an elite that were white wealthy business owners, and the lower classes were the workers. So it's, in both cases, it's about keeping people in line and oppressing people. I mean, these organizations were, and this is what I find it informs a lot of my opinions today. These forces were created to oppress people that should not have been oppressed. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. I'm pretty sure most people in the world agree that slavery is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And beating up people because they want to be treated fairly is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's exactly what police forces were formed for. And to bring that into today's context, why would you expect them to be any other way? You know, when you hear all these horrible stories, like on my show, of all these abuses, how could it be anything else? These are organizations that were formed for the sole purpose of oppressing people. So we shouldn't be surprised to know that they're still doing that.
Yeah,
that was
people.
Their original function in society. And for all they talk about, law and order, and somebody's got to do it. Well, it just doesn't seem accurate. And as far as law enforcement goes, there are a lot more sensible ways that could be accomplished than hiring a bunch of thugs with guns. To me that seems extremely ill-advised.
Well, so it seems though if you were not. Going back again to this history, this history of police where they were explicitly about the oppression of folks. If you were on the being oppressed side, I imagine you did not have a positive view of the police force. How did this change? I mean, was there something that happened historically? Was there a big PR effort?
I'm not sure. To be perfectly honest, I'm not exactly sure how this happened. What I would note in the South is that, in the 1840s, when these slave patrols were originally formed, the first real American police forces, we were... could you repeat the question again, Dave?
basically, I'm thinking that at a certain point in time, people must have viewed these new police forces as negatively, like almost universally, unless you were, you know, a wealthy plantation owner or you owned the coal mine.
That's always been true. If you look at the American South during the segregation era, mm-hmm. you'll see the police. I mean, look at the any films you can find of uprisings in Montgomery, Alabama, or places like that in the 60s, and you'll see police oppression there too. I don't believe.
Well, I'm just saying though that if I look across now, it would seem that generally speaking, Americans have a positive view of police officers. You know, they might grumble when they get a parking ticket or a speeding ticket.
I can explain that. That's because most Americans truly believe that they are part of the ruling elite.
Okay.
No, it's true. Americans,
that solves
for
that.
Some reason, and I don't mean to be insulting to your country.
Oh,
but Americans
no.
have this.
I insult my country like nobody else. Feel free.
Well, Americans seem to have this idea that, you know, they're part of the elite. And, you know, these days, 80% of Americans think that they're part of the elite.
I think I'm going to contradict you slightly there. I think that most Americans think that they can become part of the elite.
There have been studies on this. 29% of Americans believe that they are in the top 1% of the wealthiest Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Simply not possible. 29%
yeah,
of Americans think they're already there,
mm-hmm.
and they're not.
Right. Well, I guess I've always figured...
what you're saying is true, mm-hmm. you know, that Horatio Alger...
Yes, I hate that guy.
...kind of mythology. Many Americans think they're already there.
Yeah.
And they aren't.
I mean,
but a part of it is I think that a lot of people have accepted that they are part of this ruling elite. And so
keeping people down is in their best interest.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I think. I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that. The basis for my belief there is mostly anecdotal.
Okay. Well, and you have that study, which is...
I wish I could remember that study. I believe Michael Parenti is the one who brought it to my attention.
Okay.
And incidentally, Michael Parenti has done a lot of work documenting the way the police have dealt with working people in the manner that I've been describing to you. He takes it a lot further and takes it right up to modern times as well.
Okay, let's look into that.
He's got a really good program that you can listen to, you can download. It's quite old now, but it's called... Lazy Law and Social Control. It's a part of a series of half-hour radio lectures.
Mm-hmm.
Very informative. And it's basically a listing it's actually kind of like my show, except it just lists the abuses that police have committed against working people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting listen.
Okay. Now, I think since we're going there, you mentioned a study. Let's keeping with a slightly academic view for a second. I remember some years back that a friend of mine was telling me, a sociologist friend, he had finished reading an ethnography of a police department where the the sociologist or anthropologist or whoever they were had spent a number of months with police officers, sort of living with them day to day. Seeing what they thought and felt, and just trying to get a feel for, what do they do, why do they do what they do, what do they think what they think. And this study sort of had the ultimate conclusion was that the ultimate insult, the ultimate threat to any police officer was to in any way question their authority or to bring it into any sort of doubt. In my mind, I've sort of thought that's sort of the police, again, I try to figure out, what makes people tick, and in my mind, I sort of see the police officer as somebody who, really thinks they're out there to protect people, and that they're always in danger, and that one of the only things that keeps them from harm is the obedience of the folks that they're patrolling, and that means that they've really only got two weapons. The first weapon is this air of authority that they have, and the second, beyond that, is, physical force.
There's an excellent example of this on my show this week. I don't know if you've heard it yet.
I have not.
But you'll be playing it on your station tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Okay, well, can you give us a preview? Can you tell us this?
A large element of if you don't do what I say, then, and we've heard it, we've heard it a lot of times. There's a famous videotape that's circulating on the internet right now of of a woman in Boynton Beach who was stopped by a police officer, and he used a taser on her repeatedly, primarily because she wouldn't put down her phone.
That's worthy of tasering.
Well, it seems that any time you don't do what a police officer says, they feel they have the right to use physical force. They call it resisting.
Interesting, okay.
I don't know that that's a really accurate word for it, but I would certainly advise anyone who came into contact with a police officer to not threaten the police officer's or question the police officer's authority, and it's just a simple matter of preservation.
Yeah. But, I mean, and that's a scary thing, too, is this, you know, we're driven to believe the police are the ones to protect us, and if you're ever hurt or in danger, call 911 so you can get a hold of the police. I don't know what the Canadian number is.
It's the same.
Okay. Copycats.
everything's the same, right down to the phone number.
Gotcha. But just like, you know, so if you are attacked by the police, it's sort of like, well, what would you do exactly? And what would your, you know, I'm a middle-class white guy. I've had very little trouble with the police. And if I didn't attend protests, I'd probably have no trouble with them at all.
Right.
But yeah, I can only imagine the terror I would live in if I'd been attacked by the police, and knowing that if anything further should happen to me, they're my only people to turn to. I've been hurt. Okay, time to call the police. Oh wait, they're the guys who beat me 2 weeks ago.
Well, in fact, I'm aware that the system is very similar down there as it is up here. If you were to be in such a situation, the people that you would have to complain to are the same people that committed the offense.
Yeah, that was actually one of the worst stories I heard of police abuse a few years back, was a woman who was raped by a police officer. I'm not sure if she knew he was a police officer or not, called the police. That police officer responded to the call, came back, and raped her again. But yeah, I mean, that to me sort of drove it home like nothing else. Well, what do you do? You know, it's self-defense, I guess, is the only thing.
I would advise anyone in that situation, and I do, to hire a lawyer if it's possible. In the United States, I know you're not going to believe this, but you're actually very lucky when it comes to legal assistance.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, we don't even have public defenders.
Really?
Wow. Never mind legal aid.
Mm-hmm.
But in the United States, you have resources available to you, and they may not always be easy to find, but they're there. You have public defenders when you are arrested for a crime that will represent you in court.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about if you were attacked by the police, you should contact a lawyer about some sort of lawsuit or pressing charges?
Well, not even a lawsuit necessarily, but you certainly want to go over what your options are. It may
right.
be a lawsuit. It may
mm-hmm.
be that you can independently file charges against that police officer. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so
right.
I'm not sure, but I imagine that there would be another a number of options other than a lawsuit to deal with a problem, depending on what the problem was.
Mm-hmm. And this also reminds me of you and I talked about this earlier. I'd written something on my site and made a little comment to myself. I should ask Ron about this. Well, I looked up to see what it was. I said,
"So did I."
And it had been regarding investigative journalist did a report where they were seeing how easy or difficult it would be just to obtain a form to complain about treatment by police officers. Just to walk into the police office and say, "Can I have a complaint form?" And they must
this
have gone to
South Florida.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I remember this. We covered this on the show as well. That was a group. That was a group that were in. Actually, the study that work had been done before.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing new that week was that there was finally a news organization in Florida that was brave enough to go ahead and tell people the truth about it. The group that did that is they have a website called policeabuse.org. And that's what they do. They go in and investigate police. I'm not sure how they can afford to do this. It doesn't really sound like a very profitable thing. But the people you see on those videotapes that were that were up there going into the police departments were not actually journalists. They were members of this organization, that, and they had it wasn't even the journalists that videotaped and recorded the confrontations. It was this independent group. What the group did was they took it to, I imagine, many news organizations in Florida to try to bring attention to it, mm-hmm. and there was, they eventually found one. Now
we should say what that results were.
Sorry?
We should say what those results were in case people
aren't familiar with. It was disgusting. They went to 38 South Florida police departments and found that 33 of them didn't even have complaint forms.
Well, they said they didn't. I don't even know if that was true.
Mm.
In some of the reports, it seemed like they put up a barrier where you went to the front desk and the officer said, yeah, you're going to have to talk to the captain. And you say, well, can't I just get a form to fill out and bring back later? No, you have to talk to the captain, which is patently false. That's what I remember mostly from the news report.
That could very well be the case. It's a few months back, and I do... look into a lot of these stories.
Yeah, that is true. You got a crowded mind, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's hard. It's sometimes hard to keep it straight. And some of the stories are also very similar.
Right. But just this idea that, I mean, even something as simple as you want to get a form. I mean, you could do this at, like, a restaurant. You could probably just get a form to say, you know, I thought my waiter Johnny was rude. And, you know, give that to management.
At an IHOP or something, or a Denny's, they'll have a little card on the table where you can evaluate the service. I am fully in favor of the police carrying around such cards and giving them out every time they have contact with the public.
But at these stations, they either did not have the forms or put all sorts of you know, fictional roadblocks in your way to prevent you from being able to get a form like that. One of them was the police officer actually threatened the fella.
With a gun.
Yeah, it was insane.
Now, the story that you were writing about there was the next, it actually happened a week or two after they aired the report.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that the police went after the news organization.
Oh, that's right.
The specific journalist who was the quote unquote investigative reporter. Now, all that guy did was parrot this other group's information,
mm-hmm.
but it was enough for one of the, I think it was Broward County, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst. I believe it was the same place where the officer threatened the gentleman with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up putting private information about this reporter on a section of their website that they used to hand out information about wanted criminal suspects.
Yes.
Is that the way it went?
That is, and you're reminding me now. And it was, in addition, this was also, I think you'd mentioned earlier, in Toronto there was sort of a policeman's association. It was a similar sort of organization.
Sometimes call it the Fraternal Order of Police.
Yes, or Police Officers Benevolent Association, something like that. Yeah, it was one of those, and yeah, on their website in the area usually reserved for, you know, watch out for this top 10 FBI fugitive,
mm-hmm.
they put information about the reporter who made them look like thugs on television, which
they were. Yeah, some of it was private information, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, like his address and stuff.
Something wrong there.
Right.
The police are not allowed in most places to conduct those kinds of database searches without some kind of legal justification.
Mm-hmm.
Very often you'll hear on my show about a police officer who, say, is involved in a breakup with his girlfriend, runs the new boyfriend's license plate through the computer, and, you know, police officers have actually been fired in Toronto for things like that, and disciplined in many places across the states.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, we're definitely talking about criminal acts here on the part of the department that did this. Mm-hmm. I'd hazard a guess that no one has ever been brought to task for that.
Yeah. Well, let me put on a little, get us a little musical break here.
Sure.
And this is going to be another police song. It's going to be The Coup doing What the Popos Hate, which I sort of think refers to a time in the 90s where it seemed that every time there was a rap concert, the police would show up and break it up because as though it was a threat. And the chorus of the song is, they're not scared of rap music, they're scared of us.
Yep.
So we're going to poly that. I'm talking with Ron Anisich from Bad Cop No Donut. We'll be back after this music. Thanks for listening, folks. Okay, I'm incompetent today. There we go.
What? say when we talk to a folks and they love to relate. Shaking in their boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of fuck. This is that shit that the popos say when we talk to a folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of fuck.
My lyrics on parking tickets and summons to the court. I scribbled this on the application for county support. I practice this like a sport. Met Donald Trump and he froze up. Standing on his belly yelling, pimps down, hoes up. Stop trying to front off, break our ass a clump off. We gon' stop the world, make y'all motherfuckers jump off. Watch me chunk off Molotovs and bricks. Mr. Bailiff, you can put that in the transcripts. Is you a have or you a have not, huh? When you run out of bullets, grab rocks and throw ham hocks. Cause the dough to the pen slam locks. It don't open when your fam knocks, unless you rich and have stocks. I eat my dinner out of spam box. They carry cash off in glad locks. This is for them babies with them empty plates. This is that shit that the popos hate.
This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us. This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us.
Life in the game, showing no remorse and no shame. Rock share on things due to the dealing of cocaine. In my brain, I know it's wrong, but a job would take too long. I'm robbing niggas at gunpoint just to keep my PG&E on. And we own cognac and narcotics to keep from going neurotic. Pushing the product, powder is solid, we got it. I shot at my partner, dropped the chopper in his lap. This shit is a trap, promoting the black on black. A systematic attack on me and my race. Face it, find a way out this cycle before I'm 6 feet deep in the dirt. The consequence of putting it right. Hoes and clothes ain't worth it, even though my pockets is hurting. For certain, it's gonna be curtains if I keep on curtain. As you get older, you just realize, man, it's human nature to have things. But I gotta get out the game. Dope fiends shouting my name, temptation calling. While I sacrifice my life in order to be balling, it's all in time.
This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to a folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us. This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the boots when we start the fuck. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us.
Hey folks, we are back with Ron Anisich from Bad Cop and the Donut. Are you there, Ron?
I am.
Okay, let's turn down that song. Okay, so before, we're talking about the police, police brutality, police history, and such. I believe we were just previously talking about part of South Florida, where they tried to, were trying to find out how easy or hard it was to get complaint forms for the police, and it was very hard. So, who technically is supposed to be watching the police? Who is who's in charge of oversight for cops?
It seems to be different wherever you go. Civilian oversight is extremely uneven in both of our countries. There are places where it's done much better than other places. For example, here, I'll give you a Canadian example. There's in British Columbia, they have the oversight of the police is almost completely civilian. They have a commissioner, a branch of the provincial government in British Columbia that deals specifically with police complaints. This is fairly progressive. There are places, many other places in the U.S. and Canada where the police complaint system is completely overseen by the police itself.
Right.
For that to work, you have to have faith in the internal affairs departments and the police. Now, I interviewed this police lieutenant from Newark, New Jersey, last year. Highly decorated officer, no disciplinary history. And his position was that their role of internal affairs, at least in the Newark Police Department, was to do exactly the opposite of what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
They would consistently... they would protect police officers that do bad things rather than go after the officers who've committed crimes. And on top of that, they would frequently go after the good police officers who were whistleblowers. This particular guy, Samuel Clark is his name, he was fired. He was fired. He started to speak out and quickly found himself without a job. Same thing happened with that guy I mentioned earlier, the whistleblower here in Toronto, Jim
mm-hmm.
Castles.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out in public, talks openly about rampant corruption and abuse in the Toronto Police Department, and right now, a police officer with 30 years on the job, highly decorated, major investigations, drug task force, like all of the, highly respected officer. He's a traffic cop. He's
mm.
now one of those guys who makes sure you don't park past when your meter runs out.
Gosh, yeah.
I think the role of... to answer your question, basically the answer is internal affairs, but I would just qualify that with these people don't seem very good at doing their jobs, or their real mission is... not what their publicly stated mission is.
And they're very good at that.
It does seem so. I'm very often, when I try to report original stories, I have a hard time getting information out of through official channels.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I did an original piece about a guy in L.A. who had sex on duty with strippers and beat up his wife, and all the allegations were coming to me from his ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have to do as a journalist is get secondary sources,
right,
and confirm details, and doing that with the LAPD was not easy.
It
happened, and to LA's credit, I actually got an answer. I very often don't get answers.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Canada, I got some information that these police officers in a place called Mississauga, just outside of Toronto, they killed a guy in the 70s, and the allegation that I heard was that the police they raped him anally with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what my source said caused his death.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to know that all in custody deaths, they have coroner's inquests for those, and the coroner's
mm-hmm.
inquest records are public records. So about a year ago, I called somebody, and they said, oh, yeah, of course, they're public records. Just send me an email, and we'll get it out to you. And in Canada, the Freedom of Information Act says they had 30 days to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a year later. I still haven't got it. You know?
Well, I'm sure they just lost it. You know, that was a long time ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
I know.
Now, I haven't been pursuing it I haven't really been pursuing it since then, because my feeling is that it was so long ago that the chances that any of these people are still police officers are very, very slim.
Right.
But there are other stories that I want to work on through the same office, and I'm...
yeah, that doesn't bode well for it.
Without hiring a lawyer, I'm really having a difficult time.
Yeah.
Information is not as free-flowing as freedom of information legislation would lead you to believe it should be. Very often, media organizations are forced to go to court to get information that they're supposed to have.
Right. Now, when you were mentioning the New Jersey case with the internal affairs being either on the wrong side or just on the right side but corrupt, that sort of this well, you know, I forget the exact name, but the is it the invisible shield, the blue coat of silence? There's some sort of phrase like that. And that's what that reminded me of, is the idea that, you know, the cops have to protect each other's backs because they're all on the same side. And it fits into this mental, description I was doing earlier of the police really feeling like they're always in danger and there's no one to protect them but themselves. So they have to make sure everyone respects their authority and look out for each other because nobody else understands. At least that's sort of the hard-boiled cop point of view on TV.
No, I know what you're saying, but it is more complicated than that.
Everything is. But I'm just sort of saying this is a mental profile I've come up with. But sorry, go ahead.
I'd like you to finish off what you're saying. Sorry.
I think that was just like in my mind. You know, I often try to figure out because, you know, most of the time people don't think I'm a bad person. People usually in some way try to rationalize what they do as, you know, as the moral thing to do or a moral thing to do or a morally acceptable thing to do. And so I try to figure out how somebody can do the things that they do. And justify it to themselves, just sort of running that through in my head for the cops. It always seems like it's this idea they think that they're doing good, but they have to protect themselves.
Well, the fact is that they can't speak out. I mean, we've seen what happens when, you know, I call the cops that are whistleblowers the good cops because they're clearly in touch with their conscience on some level. However, I can completely understand how even a police officer with a good conscience would not speak out. These are guys... We'll just say they're just like you and me. Just people doing jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got a family, you got kids maybe at home, you got a mortgage, you got a couple cars, average American family. Are you going to threaten that by speaking out against your coworkers?
That's true. There always is that sort of... not only a feeling of pressure to conform, but also, you know, negative consequences. Yeah, negative consequences to that. Whether it be, you know, getting demoted at work or, you know, having your your coworker who you know is a thug.
Well, this guy here in Toronto, the only reason he spoke out is that he is 29 and a half years into his 30 years on the job.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason he spoke out, and I'd be guessing here, but, you know, we never heard a word about this guy before the end of his career.
Right.
I'm a little disappointed because he's being portrayed as this big hero in the media, and my thinking is, you know, the guy kept his mouth shut for 30 years. That's not really good, you know? Like, good for him for finally speaking out, but, you know, there's 30 years of abuse there. And I imagine he has a family. I imagine... He wouldn't want to threaten his children's education, for example, or whatever it is.
Well, so are you thinking that, what percentage of that, or I guess, so what are the proportions of the cops that are, you know, what we'd call good cops, guys who aren't out there, you know, doing thuggish things versus cops who are out there doing thuggish things?
Well, what I do is, I think of it like this, a bad cop is somebody who is sworn to uphold the law, but who actually is a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 40% of all police officers, according to several well-published and unquestioned studies, say that 40% of police officers are domestic abusers.
Okay.
So right off the top. You know, domestic abuse is a serious crime.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the top, 40% of all cops are domestic abusers. If you believe these studies, when you add to that the rapists, drug dealers, people who drink and drive, when you add all the other abuses that the police commit, I can't see how the majority of police officers could possibly be the decent, hardworking professionals that we're led to believe. Whenever you see a police abuse story, somewhere in the article, there's going to be some senior police official, a police chief, spokesman, who's going to tell you that the majority of, this is bad that this happened, but the majority of police are decent, hardworking professionals. I just don't think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how it could possibly be true.
Right.
There's, I mean, just this you know, just domestic violence alone comes close to half of all police officers. Mm-hmm. This thing with domestic abuse also poses a lot of different problems. Say you're a woman who's being beaten up by her husband. You want to call the police. But if you're aware of these studies, you know that there's a 50-50 chance that the cop that responds is going to be a domestic abuser himself.
Well, worse than that, it's probably friends of the guy that you're married to.
Well, if the police officer, well, you see, police domestic violence has even more unique problems. The police officer will be armed. Mm-hmm. The police will have that support of their coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer knows where all the women's shelters are.
Mm-hmm.
Victims of police domestic violence are in real need of support, and I'm happy to tell you that there are quite a few organizations in your country that are dealing with this specific issue.
Mm-hmm.
As far as assisting the abused.
Right.
But there aren't a lot of people that are taking on this issue from the police perspective. Now, there has been the International Association of Chiefs of Police. They came up with what they call a model domestic violence policy. They encourage all police departments in your country to come up with their own domestic violence policy. They fully acknowledge it's a huge problem. But still, many police departments have not done this. And it's just such a huge problem. It's very difficult to know how to deal with it. Police officers, from what I understand, aren't very comfortable going into counseling because it shows some, they believe it shows some weakness. It's stigmatized. As it is in normal society to a certain extent, but I believe that's more so for the police.
Right.
You know, your friends don't want to go see a therapist, right? Because they'll think that everyone will think they're crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I should say I've had friends of mine tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that that's a much bigger problem for a police officer.
Right.
You have to worry about, you know, your friends and coworkers need to... You know, it's the police culture. They need to have faith in you. They need you to be solid, and there can't be a minute amount of doubt. And so showing weakness and going and seeking help or counseling or therapy is something that a police officer does not seem likely to do.
Right.
Now, there are instances where they are ordered to go into domestic abuse counseling programs, but... there's an example on my show this week of a cop who beat up his wife in 1998, lost his job, got another job in the same state. Now, when he lost his job in 1998, the charge was dropped because he completed this domestic abuse program. Well, here we are less than 10 years later, and he's been arrested again for domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if a police officer can get into one of these programs, or is ordered into one of the programs,
they seem less
than
effective.
Not a given that the problem ends there.
Right.
Part of the problem is that when the police, it's too easy for them to keep their jobs. There's a lot of complicated reasons for that, but I find that whole issue very, very troubling, very, very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that there are people bringing attention to it, at least. And I'm happy that there's some special support for these unique victims. But
yeah.
Just to go back to what I was saying before, if you're just even the average woman, any woman, you can't feel comfortable calling the police if you are the victim of domestic abuse. Because even if your batterer isn't a police officer, there's still a lack of capability amongst the police to deal with this issue, primarily because they are often domestic abusers themselves.
Right. Okay.
How is a police officer going to help a woman who's being beaten by their husband if that police officer is a domestic abuser?
Right.
It limits their ability to effectively do their jobs.
Right. Now, what's interesting to me is I was... when I was drawing up questions to be talking about on the show today, I was putting up what I thought were, you know, how some of the isms affect what the police do. You know, racism, classism, and sexism. And we've actually covered all that without actually having to ask anything about that. And,
you know, we could actually go over a little more into
well, we could. I just wanted to point out, though, that we've already talked about how the very first police forces were based on, you know, the racist institution of slavery, the opponent, with the lack of being able to adequately, I guess, be police officers with regards to certain crimes that mostly affect women, or the fact that they're the perpetrators of those crimes.
I did a story in a place called East Fishkill, New York.
Okay.
Police officer. I know it's a funny.
It is a funny name.
But it's actually Fishkill is actually a morphed Dutch word.
Okay.
Fishkill or something like that. It means river or something like that.
Okay.
So East Fishkill, New York. A female police officer. Now, there's some history here. There have only ever been four women police officers in this department. The one I interviewed on my show was sexually harassed by all of the male officers. In fact, at one point she was sexually assaulted in the bathroom by the chief of police at his wife's birthday party.
God,
it was really
okay.
bad. There were
three
other women police officers before that. The very first one committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
The second two, both, as my guest did, sued the department for sexual harassment. Now, yeah, they certainly have a poor track record, and having women officers doesn't seem to help that much. But there's definitely a major gender bias in the police. It's very patriarchal. I mean, the whole organization is extremely patriarchal.
It really is bizarre. Just like the culture of it is so, you know, manly man. I can't even think of what else. But yeah, just that sort of, I don't know. Machismo is a scary, weird thing.
Well, it's funny because there are in the context of police, I completely agree with you, but there are certain cultures where that element of machismo is not quite as offensive. Have you ever been to
Italy? For example, I have not.
Well, women who've been to Italy tell me that men there are very aggressive and touchy, and but it's somewhat more culturally acceptable in some cultures. I don't know that I necessarily always agree that just because there are cultural differences, then that makes it okay. But it's a fair comment, I guess, that there are cultures where that behavior isn't frowned upon as much as it is in our society.
Well, how much is it frowned on in our society? We're letting them get away with it. No,
most
of us have. You are not. You are the Batman. You are keeping an eye and exposing everyone to what the cops are doing. A lot of the rest of us aren't speaking out as much or doing as much as we should.
Oh, well, you know, you pick your battles, right?
Mm.
I have, just for me, what they taught me in journalism school was that I had to be focused. And I have a lot of interests outside of police abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost disappointed right now because there's so many other things that I'd like to be doing. but this is really taking up so much of my time at this point that...
Now, are you getting a lot of attacks, or do you get more parking tickets than the average fella? Are the police aware of you and kind of have a grudge against you?
My therapist has advised me that I shouldn't drive.
Mm.
So, and I've never had a driver's license. I live in a big city with a fairly good public transit system, so it's not necessary for me to drive. So I do not drive. I do notice that police cars drive by the radio station when I'm there fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been attacked in the media, as you know,
right.
By the former chief of police here.
Go figure.
Tried to have my show banned. yeah, that was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a really, really odd experience. But I think the fact that happened, that I got quite a lot of attention right mm-hmm. near the beginning of when I started doing this. I've only been doing the show for less than 6 months when all that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that that happened kind of made it very difficult for them to come after me after that.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's pretty much public knowledge. You
right.
know, everybody, if anything were to happen to me, the first thing everybody would think was that it had to do with my work.
Yeah, those damn cops finally got him.
Well, yeah, I'm not convinced that something like that isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, I'm careful. I'm careful. I, you know, look over my shoulder pretty often. But this thing with the cops driving by the radio station when I'm there, it's pretty crazy. The radio station's on a university campus that has its own security. It's basically its own police force.
Mm-hmm.
City police shouldn't even be on campus. But they are. And it's gotten ridiculous to the point where one night I had a friend, and this is about 5 in the morning, and she was going home. She was going to go out to her bicycle and drive her bike home. So I walked her out to her bike. It's downtown Toronto, middle of the night, just being a good guy, right? Being
mm-hmm.
a good friend. Well, you know, we don't even get 10 feet from the front door of the building. A police car pulls out from around the corner and starts questioning us.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? What are you doing? Oh, you just look like somebody that we're looking for somebody. You kind of match their description. Well, I look around. You know, I'm a pretty average guy, right? Mm-hmm. I'm wearing a black hoodie, black pants. I can see 3 other guys from where I'm standing that are dressed the exact same way. They didn't say a word to them.
Right.
Now, without being paranoid, you know, it could be that I am a little sensitive.
Well, yeah, it'd be hard to not sort of bring that into consideration.
I get the impression that they're kind of... If there's any truth to that they might be like keeping an eye on me or watching me very closely or just harassment by proximity,
right?
That doesn't worry me so much. You know, at the end of the day, I don't think my show is anti-cop. I think that, you know, I interview police officers on my show. I don't see how, you know, like, what I want ideally is no police abuse.
Right.
You would think the police would be in favor of that.
Yeah, I've often thought that. You know, when there's a case of police brutality, you know, it's sort of like, wait a minute, aren't you cops on my side? Brutality is against the law. You're against criminals. Shouldn't we both be working together on this?
Yeah,
but that doesn't happen so much.
The blue wall of silence.
Yeah.
Everything in that police officer's experience is going to tell him not to help you.
Exactly.
Because it jeopardizes his place in society. You know, police officers are fairly well paid in most places.
Mm-hmm.
They see themselves as part of the elite in many cases.
just like most Americans, you were saying.
Well, yeah.
They fall into the same trap.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
The police might consider themselves in that. I don't know that they consider themselves in that super elite.
I thought they like consider themselves working class Joes.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Starting salary for a police officer in Toronto is over $70,000 a year.
Wow,
that's the start.
That's more than I make.
I'm not going to tell you how many times more than what I get paid, that is.
Yeah,
But yeah, they... who's going to jeopardize that?
That's true.
It's a pretty strong motivator. You know, you have a family. Like I say, you've got a family. Mm. You've got... People are... This is a problem that I think, that as an anarchist, has always concerned me about society, and that is that people take their personal interests before anything else.
Right.
You know, people... Who's going to... I'm trying to come up with a good example here. People are not willing to change because they're afraid of losing what they have now. It's very self-interested.
Yeah, there's a great saying
I heard.
If you're
white and middle class,
mm-hmm.
why would you want things to change?
Yeah.
If you're white and middle class, you got it pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want anything to change?
Yeah, there's this great saying I heard a while ago that says more people are bribed by their own money than by anyone else's, which I've always interpreted to mean just that. that people become so accustomed to what they have, which is their own money, that more people are bribed to accept the status quo because of that than they are by somebody saying, hey, I'll give you, you know, $100 to do this.
Well, even on a really, let's take something on a really a less significant level than physical abuse or... it's significant. I was going to give fair trade chocolate as an example. You know, you could pay 40 cents extra for a chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of spending that 40 extra cents on a chocolate bar, people in a developing country will have schools, drinkable water, food, health care, all kinds of stuff that they wouldn't have if they were working in that the cocoa industry in, say, a place like the Ivory Coast, where the majority of the world's cocoa comes from, and it's primarily harvested by child slaves.
Mm-hmm.
People don't think twice about that. They're just thinking, I'm not willing to spend that extra 40 cents on a chocolate bar. I don't know why that is, but everybody knows fair trade chocolate is a good idea.
Well, I think you're stretching. I mean, I agree. Anybody who knows what fair trade chocolate is and has it explained to them would know. But I would, you know, I'm just looking at the part of the country I live in. I'd be betting 80 to 90% of the people would have never heard of free trade or fair trade chocolate.
Well, up here, that's not the case. I've written extensively on it. It's fairly well talked about. I don't think the problem is that people don't know. I just think that people are, for some reason, unwilling to...
I'm sorry. I guess I sort of... I got off of your general point to be specific. But no, I see what you're saying.
No, it could very well be a really horrible example. It was just the first thing that popped into my head. It's very frustrating to me that people aren't willing to do that.
Right.
Well, I mean, they're readily available.
Yeah.
They're, in very many cases up here, they're in the same stores. It's not quite as widely available.
Right.
I mean, it sure beats child slavery. If you can end child slavery...
most things beat child slavery, let me tell you.
If you can end child slavery by spending a couple extra cents on a chocolate bar, then I think you'd think that everybody who knew that would do it.
Yeah, it's just so divorced from your experience. You know, it's not like, you know, if you had to go to the candy store and the child slave had to walk up to you and hand it to you, that would be one thing. But the fact that it happens, you know, probably happened 2 months ago in a country 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, it's funny. People in your country, I've noticed, are really concerned about the seal hunt up here.
Mm-hmm.
And, here, there's no concern about it whatsoever.
Yeah, I know.
To us, it seems ridiculous. It seems they're like vermin. the myth of the cute white-furred baby seal getting clubbed. First of all, it's not true. They don't club the white-furred baby seals. That doesn't happen. Oh my, where was I going with that?
No, just it is easier to get. Actually, sometimes I think we're making two different points.
I know where I was going with that.
Go ahead.
These people are concerned about, you know, the fact that these seals are getting clubbed in the head. They don't stop for a minute to think that's how their steak got to their table. Yeah, it's true.
Right.
Cows are killed the same way. It's a hammer in the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's no more humane. I'd also add to that people up here would view Americans' opposition to clubbing baby seals in the same way that, you know, a New York City resident would react to, somebody in Greenland saying, oh, you've got to stop killing all those rats. They're animals.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. If you stopped killing the rats in New York City, you'd find that the rats very quickly took over.
Yeah.
And, it's actually come close to that at the civil point. I think there are more rats in New York City than there are people.
There probably are. But let me try to wrap up here. We are approaching, getting towards the end of the show.
Okay.
But earlier on, you were mentioning the idea of law enforcement, and you were saying that there had to be cheaper, more efficient ways of accomplishing the alleged goals of the police than by hiring on the descendants of the slave capturers and the union busters.
It makes no sense to send a bunch of armed thugs out into deal with a bunch of armed thugs.
Yeah, well, I guess okay, I'll rephrase the question. This is the part of the interview where we look towards the future and solutions, so I'll let you run with that.
Police, too.
A lot of badness
ago,
with police.
They had a conference on policing here in Toronto. A city councilor that I actually have respect for and a former member of the Police Services Board, which is our very weak civilian oversight for the police here, talked about a future of policing that included not having a traditional police force, a system of a more community-based system where police officers are elected from within the community, where it's seen as more of a public service than a job. It could be done on a volunteer basis. But for and it could be because I'm an anarchist that this appeals to me as well. That I think that people need to take responsibility for their own communities. What we do as a society generally is we rely on the government to solve all of our problems. Anything that comes up, we go to the government for a solution. Very short-sighted.
And then the government tries to dodge it, and they try to give it over to a private industry who says, yeah, we'll do that for money.
Well, policing, that would be devastating.
Yes.
In policing. But...
Are there any movements towards that? I mean, we keep seeing in the military they're more and more hiring of the independent contractors. They keep calling them instead of mercenaries. Is there any movement towards private police forces anywhere? Well,
if you travel through the United States, you will see gated communities.
Ah, yes.
Many of these gated communities employ their own police.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily know that they're called police officers, but.
I'm sure not. Yes, exactly. It'll be something like that.
That could be an example of privatization of something that has been traditionally the role of a public service.
But yeah, I sort of interrupted. You're going towards another form of police force that would be community-oriented, members of the community, rather than a separate class of folks who see themselves as a type of gang.
Well, the reality is that in many minority communities, the police are seen as an occupying force.
Yes.
You hear that all the time, and there's a reason for that. The police aren't people from the community. They don't have the community's best interest at heart because they don't live there. I can envision a future, and call me an optimist, but I envision a future where. The police are not about oppression, where the police are about, really about protecting people and serving a community. And I think the only way to achieve that is to make them accountable. And I think the only way to do that is to have elections. I envision it something like this. I live on a block of a city. There's nothing I would like more than to be able to, get together with my neighbors and come up with a solution. To keep our street safe and patrolled. The other thing, this takes care of one part of policing, which is the keeping everybody safe. Right? There's a whole other element of policing, which is the investigative side of it. That side of policing is a complete fantasy, in my opinion. for all the shows like CSI and Law and Order, very popular myth-making shows, the reality of it is, at the end of the day, the police solve very few crimes. Most crimes that have been, the major crimes that have happened in Toronto in the past year were, here's a good example. There was a woman who was dismembered, body parts strewn across part of the city. And the police answer to investigating this crime was to conduct searches of every house in the neighborhood. Now, there's no legal justification or precedent for this. A lot of the people resisted letting the police into their homes.
Right.
When they did this, the police told them that we will come back with a warrant because if you don't let us search your home, you're a suspect. Basically harassing and browbeating their way into people's homes for a search that, incidentally, in the end, led nowhere. That crime was eventually solved by one of the disappeared woman's neighbors who didn't accept the boyfriend's explanation for where the girlfriend was and called the police. My opinion, that crime was not solved by the police. That crime was solved by a citizen. I think that the power of citizens in regulating society has been vastly underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a child goes missing, the police often aren't the people that find them.
That's true. I mean, that's actually been the new and sort of sensationalistic law here in, I'm not sure if it's the U.S. or just California, the Amber Alert system, where there's all these big light boards, you know, big signs on the freeway where they can change the text on them. And if a child has been kidnapped, all of these signs light up with, you know, the name of the child, the description, and description of the car they were in, so
right.
that it's distributing the search efforts amongst everyone rather than just having the police do it.
I think that is an excellent idea, and I'll tell you why. That's a grassroots organization. That's bottom-up. That's not the government.
It's grassroots investigation, but I think the actual decision of what to put up and all that, I think that's centralized. I think that is the police or somebody.
There could be a law enforcement element there. But first of all, the Amber Alert movement is not just in the United States. It's everywhere. We have it.
Sure.
And I think that kind of communication is the kind of thing, that's the kind of thing that does keep people safe.
It does.
And
I mean, on top of that, I've heard about other sort of things. I think in New York, there's some websites that have come up dealing with, like, flashers on the subway, where if, I might be confusing two different things. I know there was one case of a man who was a flasher, and they, like, took the guy's picture and put it up on the internet, and his identity was discovered through that, and he was arrested. I think I've also heard about websites with for women, about men who they've dated who have attempted to assault them or something, and they would put this information up as a warning to other women. And that's not necessarily a way to, like, you know, arrest folks and put them in jail, but that's a way that could be keeping people safe.
I have some concerns about that.
Well, yeah,
that
obviously
would be
that
primarily
there's
privacy and accuracy.
Right.
I can see a lot of room for abuse in a system like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the current, you know, I've had some personal experiences along this line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, laws that are meant to protect people can be abused very easily, even in the existing legal structure. When you take away the regulation and just allow people to post anything,
Then you just have a bulletin board system.
There are people out there that will abuse that, that will put up information that's false. Even the police, as we've already noted, have done this on their own website.
Mm-hmm.
People will, because of human nature, they'll abuse a system like that. That being said, I think it's a preferable option. I think that open communication, when it's factual, does help solve crimes. You know, I don't want people to be taking children away from their parents. I think we all agree that that's bad. Now, if we can let people know, like the Amber Alert system, when those people are out there, it's kind of like a confession on the part. I also like it because it's kind of a confession on the part of the police that they actually can't deal with this themselves, but they actually do require the public to, you know, quote unquote, solve the crime for them.
Right.
I think that you know, that's just another sign that you know, what I'm saying is right. It makes more sense to me that community-based, non-hierarchical, and possibly without authority, you know, a peer system of, you know, public safety, helping out your neighbors when there's trouble. You know, if somebody's getting beat up the street, maybe calling the person who you elected to protect the street, or whether that person's on the street patrolling. It's going to do people a lot better than calling a government agency that is arguably ill-equipped to deal with the crisis in the first place, depending on what it is.
Right.
I envision a future of my hopeful vision of policing is that it goes this way. It's a community-based and accountable to people on a very, very, very small scale. There could be all kinds of ways to administer something like that, whether it's elections from the block, as I would like, or there's a number of ways to accomplish a better system of keeping ourselves safe. Guns and thuggery is, I find it very a difficult argument to defend that that's going to improve society in any way by putting more people with more guns out on the street. I think that's very short-sighted. Of course, my nightmare scenario would be the exact opposite. I've noticed in your country and mine that there's been a move more and more and more to the conservative right. And this concerns me because they tend to embrace authoritarianism.
Right.
Don't tend to deal with some of the things that I'm concerned about in our society, as well as you know, other methods. So I have a nightmare scenario where, you know, I mean, the police are in the United States. You know about the NSA wiretapping?
Oh, of course.
And to me, that's you know, that's something Stalin would do, and did.
Yeah.
That doesn't...
We're not fond of our little Stalin here.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's not just that guy. You know, George Bush is... you know, we have a guy like him up here now, too. It's not... They aren't the problem. They're more or less powerless. They are at the beck and call of a much greater power, which is the ruling elite that... those are the people who have the real power in society. I think people like your president and my prime minister are basically just puppets who carry out a corporate elite agenda. And it frustrates me that we elect these people, although you guys kind of didn't.
I mean, it's... That's a different conversation for a different day.
I same with that. I mean, the fact is that in both of our countries, more people don't vote than voted for anyone who's in government right now.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Victory for the people who don't vote. There should be no presidents because the majority elected for no or voted for nobody, so nobody should be president.
Or perhaps we need to look at making democracy as we know it a little more democratic.
Absolutely
crazy. I think
that
would help a lot of things, including police abuse.
That's crazy and out of the question.
Well, I'm an optimist. I'm
just kidding you. But
I would like to think that it's going to go more my way than the other way. I think people have historically also resisted these kinds of things when they've happened in the past.
Right.
You know, there are revolutions, and with particularly tyrannical governments all around the world, things get really bad, and then things change. You know, there was a time in France when they had a king.
That's true. I think Gandhi was always saying that was one of his phrases, was that for every awful dictatorial regime that has ever existed, they all went away at some point. And the people, every single time.
Yeah,
so,
I like that guy.
Yeah.
That Gandhi guy seems pretty cool.
Yeah, let's vote for him.
Oh, if we were so lucky. He has some descendants that haven't been quite as progressive.
That is true. Well, I'm going to wrap things up here. I've been talking with Ron Anisich from Bad Cop No Donut, which is the anti-police brutality, anti-police corruption show on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. When do you broadcast? What's the day and time for that?
Who, in Toronto?
Yes, in case I could have people listening in Toronto right now.
6 a.m. In Toronto.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you had a better time slot than that.
You know what? This has frustrated me for a long time. I host the only independently produced syndicated radio show in the entire country. And they've got me on at a time when... But, you know, I shouldn't complain. I'm happy to... You know, I guess I should feel lucky that I am able to do this at all.
Okay, everybody, we're starting a campaign. Right to CKLN.
Get Ron
a better time slot.
There are some internal issues at the radio station where I volunteer right now that are They're long-term things, and we're working on it.
That doesn't matter. We're starting a campaign. We're getting around a better time slot.
Everywhere else, I don't want to complain, because everywhere else I have a really great time slot.
That's true. We broadcast you here noon on Fridays, which is a pretty good time slot.
Right, and my show was just on in Santa Cruz about an hour ago. And,
see, we got your back. You may be the station that you know that you help make famous with your broadcast. They don't care, but we care.
Well, there are a lot of other people at CKLN who do really excellent work and who raise the profile of the station consistently as well. We have award-winning writers. We have well-respected civil rights era activists, and there are a lot of great things about CKLN.
Okay.
Some of them management right now.
Gotcha.
That leaves a little to be desired, but
okay. But
but I am very grateful to be able to talk to you today, and I'm also very grateful that in most places I'm on at a reasonable time of day.
Yeah,
but it's all my listeners in Toronto. If you can hear it whenever you want on the internet. So.
That is true. Yeah, we'll plug the site badcopnodonut.fm. I have all the news, all the podcasts. It lists all of the stations that rebroadcast the show in case
the ones that I know of.
The ones you know.
I get letters quite often that refer to people hearing it in places where I didn't know it was on.
Right.
And I don't require people to tell me if they're playing it or not. I suspect it's on in more places than I know about.
All right.
I hope so.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you very much. And
it's been a pleasure,
Jim. All the listeners, tune in to Bad Cop No Donut on our station or download the podcast. And we're going to hop into a little bit more music, and then we'll call
you
it.
You want to listen to tomorrow's show for sure, Jake. It's a good one.
Okay, I will tune in. And I'm going to play a little more music. This is going to be 1905, the song called Throw. The chorus is Throw Your Uniform Away, which I think is part of our own solution for the future. So let's play some music, and I'll talk to you back in a bit.
I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and Sue it! rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. If that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
The next generation. Hear me. and no one stops it in any way. All a peacemaker turn war officer.
Oh yeah,
scaring the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police at the ease in the street.
Oh yeah,
fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition. Genesis to Revelation. The next generation. Hear me.
Songs playing Police and Thieves. We're talking about Police All Show and Thieves. Kenny Boylay of Enron and Jeffrey Skillings of Enron convicted today of all sorts of fraud. They's going to jail. We want our money back, you bastards. Took all that money from California with your energy scams. We want it back. This has been another edition of the Lying Media Bastards radio show. Special thanks to Ron Anisich, Bad Cop No Donut. Check out his website, badcopnodonut.fm. Listen to the broadcast, rebroadcast of the show Friday at noon on radio at radioactiveradio.org. He says we should really tune in for tomorrow's show. I guess this week's show. Make sure you catch it or download it from that site. I'm also going to ask Mr. Ron. He mentioned in the interview organizations in the United States which help victims of domestic violence who are married to police officers, as they have a special hell to be living in and trying to escape. I'm going to see if I can't get some of those addresses from him and put them up on the site. For more politics and news and rebroadcasts of this show, go to linemediamasters.com. Thanks for listening. I'm out.